We'd like to welcome Father Matthew Baker. He is a priest of the Greek Orthodox Metropolis of Boston and a PhD candidate in systematic theology at Fordham University. He's currently working as an adjunct professor of theology at Hellenic College. Father Matthew, welcome.
Thank you, Father.
Let me ask you this question. Why is the event next week in Jerusalem so important for faithful Orthodox Christians and Catholics, not just the hierarchs of the churches?
Well, the meeting is commemorating the 50th anniversary of the first meeting of the Pope and the Patriarch in 1964 in Jerusalem, Pope Paul VI and Patriarch Athenagoras, which itself was significant because it was the first time an ecumenical patriarch and a pope had met since the 1400s, so over 500 years. And this event is commemorating the 50th anniversary of that. And also it's a time for taking stock of the achievements and the progress of 50 years of ecumenical interaction and dialogue. Mm-hmm. And it's an expression of our continued commitment to that dialogue in search for Christian unity between the Orthodox and the Roman Catholic churches.
So that indicates there's an ongoing relationship, of course, between these two churches in general, correct?
There's an ongoing relationship, which has, of course, always been the case ever since the tragic schism. Mm-hmm. Of course, there have been high points and low points in that relationship. But since the late 1950s, there has been an increasing commitment to an ecumenical conversation. And we could say the first stage of that conversation took place in the early 60s, when the Orthodox at the Rhodes Conference in 1961 made the decision to open an official dialogue with the Roman Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. And then there was various meetings between the Pope and the Ecumenical Patriarch, as in Jerusalem, and then later in Rome and in Istanbul. And then finally, in 1980, began the official theological dialogue. So we could say that there are two stages to the dialogue, or two dimensions, both crucial. The dialogue of love, which was the starting point, but then this dialogue of truth in the form of the work of theologians and ecumenical dialogue. And, of course, these two elements should never be separated.
Mm-hmm. Let's look at some of the main issues facing that theological dialogue between the Roman Catholic Church and the Orthodox Church now and probably in the decade to come. What are your thoughts?
Well, let me put it in a positive terms. Let me make the starting point a positive one. Since 1980, when the official theological dialogue began, there was an agreement on both sides to take the theme of communion, koinonia, as the starting point. There's a deep agreement. There's a convergence that has been happening that really began before this dialogue. Among Orthodox and Roman Catholic theologians in the 20th century in terms of viewing the Church in terms of communion. So not primarily, first of all, institution or law, although these things have a place or power or authority, but communion. Mm-hmm. A communion which has its center in the Eucharist and which is effected by the Eucharist. So this was the starting point. And then within that framework, the dialogue began to discuss the place of episcopacy, bishops, unity of faith and sacraments, apostolic succession. And then it was derailed for a while after the fall of the Soviet Union because of various problems in Ukraine and other places. But then there's been a renewal of that dialogue in the last 7 or 8 years. And they produced a document in 2007, the Ravenna document, which very important document, which if our listeners aren't familiar with it, I encourage them to look it up. You can find it online and read it. And this shows a strong agreement on some basics of how we understand the Church as a communion. The universal Church is a communion of local churches united in the same faith, in the same sacramental order, within that communion of churches, there needs to be an ordering. There's a need for both cooperation, but also, in order to affect that cooperation, some leadership, as we would say, primacy. So we're agreed upon that, And we are agreed that that primacy should always take place within the context of a synod or a council of bishops, the synod of bishops. So we never separate leadership from cooperation, if you like. So there's a strong agreement on this, and that this pattern should pertain on every level of the church, on the local level, the bishop in his diocese with his presbyters and people, on the regional level, whether it be an archdiocese or an autocephalous church, and on the universal level, with the primacy of Rome, or as somewhat differently understood, the primacy of Constantinople within the Orthodox Church. So those are the positives. The problems are, of course, we understand the role of the primacy and the nature and the foundations of that primacy quite differently. There's been a divergent development. And the Roman Catholic Church, in her history, especially since the Middle Ages, and climaxing at the First Vatican Council in 1870, dogmatized certain claims regarding the papacy that are unacceptable to the Orthodox. Mm-hmm. So we need to iron those out. And there's a commitment on both sides to do so.
Okay.
But it's not going to be an easy path.
Well, I can hear our listeners saying, okay, Father, and I'm going to speak to you as a pastor to a pastor. I've been a pastor now 3 decades, and they're going to ask me, what does that have to do with me? How does this all trickle down into my existence? Practical cooperation amongst the churches. What's the value of
okay,
all this?
Yeah. Well, it trickles down, you know, the positives and the negatives trickle down. The negative trickles down because we are not able to celebrate the Eucharist together.
Okay.
Right? We have 2 churches on the same street, Orthodox and Roman Catholic, and we are divided. We are fundamentally divided. We are not the same church. And we are divided for some reasons that are just perhaps matters of historical accident. But not only that, there are some fundamental differences in how we understand the Christian faith and the nature of the church. And this, of course, affects us on a concrete level in situations such as mixed marriages, right? Mm-hmm. That you have husbands and wives who are unable to meet at the Eucharistic cup together. That's tragic. So there's a negative side. The positive side, as far as the commitment to dialogue, is that we have more that unites us than divides us. And certainly on issues of social ethics, abortion, marriage, bioethics, more fundamentally just the a witness to the dignity of the human person created in the image and likeness of God. These are issues where we have a fundamental agreement, and so we can cooperate in terms of a witness. And I think we have to say as Orthodox, in all humility, that Roman Catholics have done a better job than we have in this department in terms of articulating their social teachings. Mm-hmm. Regarding bioethics and matters of the family, marriage, and so forth. So we can take a lesson from them there.
All right. These are 2 unique individuals who are going to meet in Jerusalem next week, Pope Francis and Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew. They're specific mm-hmm. leaders. They have their own set of skills, their own set of accomplishments thus far. Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew has been, of course, Patriarch for longer than Pope Francis, but Pope Francis's history is now known very well. How will their past, how will their education, how will their basic demeanor, do you think, help shape the specific meeting, as well as possibly even the relationships between the churches that they lead?
Yeah, well, first of all, Patriarch Bartholomew has been kind of observer and party to all of this dialogue, really, almost since the beginning. I don't know the exact dates about when he was a student at Halki and when he was ordained, but I know that he was, you know, close observer of all these developments in the early 60s. I believe he was close to Metropolitan Meliton of Chalcedon, who was one of the key players in some of this early dialogue, for instance, the lifting of the anathemas in 1965. So he is a veteran of this ecumenical exchange. He is committed to it. Furthermore, he studied at the Oriental Institute in Rome mm-hmm. During, I believe, the latter part of the Second Vatican Council, or slightly after, in the 60s anyways, which is a Jesuit-run institution. He speaks Italian. He's a very cosmopolitan figure. He's familiar with Roman Catholic piety and traditions. So he's a broad-minded person. And then we have Pope Francis is a Jesuit, which is unique. There's never been a Jesuit pope. So there is that connection there with the Jesuits and the Oriental Institute. Pope Francis also had a close relationship with Ukrainian Catholics when he was bishop in Argentina. He also has made clear signals that he is committed to continuing a certain process of, which has been taking place since the Vatican Council with certain fits and starts, of greater emphasis on episcopal collegiality, the local church, decentralization of the structure of the Latin Church, all of which is important to us and congenial to us, to the Orthodox and our understanding of how the Church should work, that it's not a monolithic monarchy run from the top down, but it's a communion of local churches. So we have many things that we can agree upon there, and I think we can say that on both sides there's a profound commitment to the progress of the dialogue. On the other hand, I want to stress that really this meeting is largely a symbolic gesture. It's a symbol. It's not going to create any kind of union tomorrow. There's the hard work, which is done by theologians. Of course, symbols are very important because if we don't meet with somebody and if we don't embrace them, we can't really come to an understanding with them. But then there's that hard process of theological work, which is largely being done by others, not by the Pope.
Is there any fear in meeting Father Matthew?
Well, I think it depends on who you talk to. I think on the Orthodox side, we have some rather loud protesters who often are ill-informed about the nature of the dialogue. Mm-hmm. I would just stress that the Church has always been involved in ecumenism. St. Athanasius was an ecumenist. St. Basil was an ecumenist. St. Cyril of Alexandria was an ecumenist. St. Mark of Ephesus was an ecumenist. The Church has always been involved in ecumenism, that is to say that in the work of reconciliation, the ministry of reconciliation, especially with all those who confessed the name of Christ as Lord. So this is not new. And I would also stress that those who are doing the hard work on both sides, they're committed to their traditions and they're committed to their churches, and neither side is out to sell the farm. but they do want to see beyond certain disagreements and perhaps see if we can come to some kind of convergence, in some kind of meeting in the truth. That's what we want.
Okay. Very good. Thank you very much, Father Matthew, for being with us today and for sharing your thoughts. And, of course, we're praying for this event that will take place next week. As you know, I'm going to be there doing the English commentary. And,
wonderful.
We're very excited about being there. And thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to share your thoughts with us.
Thank you. Christ is risen.
Truly is risen. Thank you.